Welcome to the F1 Geeks podcast, where we take you deep into the world of Formula One. Join us every week with a new episode where we update you on F1 news, what's happening with contracts, the drivers, teams, circuits, and last but not least, all the behind-the-scenes drama. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you stream. Give the episodes a like and follow us on your favorite social media channel. Cheers.
Man, this race was not a letdown. It was amazing. It was phenomenal. Yes. It was great, right?
From like start to finish, like qualifiers, like the beginning of the weekend to the end, I was so pumped, but it left me, and we'll get into this. By the end of the race, I was like, I'm devastated. I don't know how to enjoy the rest of my Sunday. Should I celebrate Lewis's win or should I mourn Lando's loss? Like, so, what do I do? That was my dilemma. That's the dilemma of an F1 fan.
It's a good problem to have.
I felt very stunted.
Man, it was a look into the future of Formula One on Saturday.
Well done.
It really was, because you have Lando on pole. And we had a Mr. Carlos Sainz in second in his Ferrari and George Russell in third. What a freaking 1-2-3 that nobody predicted.
That was like a for real KO that no one predicted. And you're just like, what is happening here? But you're right. I think you put it the best way. It was like a look into the future. Is this what we are going to be seeing within the next 2 to 3 years? Maybe not even, maybe like next year, this is what's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's exactly. We don't know what's gonna happen next year with the new rule. The new rules with the new cars moving forward. Yeah, I mean, it could be a total shift in power. It's gonna be a brand new Game of Thrones, right? It's gonna be awesome. You like that one too?
I'm blown away that Lake Louise water has
First thing you read when you walk into the hotel room is they have a little note for you that says, drink the tap water. It's some of the purest in the world. So, and I did.
Look at you. You are blowing me out of the water with all this growth. Yeah, you're so poetic. Thank you.
So one thing I saw, which I didn't quite like I knew it, but I didn't really register it, was no one in the last like 5 years since 16 has, no one's won from pole at this race. And that was a statistic that I remember reading last season, but I've forgotten about it. And so at first I was bummed out for Carlos. I was super happy. It was everything all weekend. Like you said, like, you didn't know whether they'd be happy for Lewis or upset for Lando or vice versa. And same thing on Saturday, right? You didn't know whether to be happy for Carlos or happy for Lando or upset for one or the other, because they all deserve it. All of them deserve it. But after I saw that a statistic, I was like, oh man, so this is going to be like a bummer for one guy and it's going to be positive for the other. It's going to swap around potentially. And which it ended up doing. Carlos got the toe at the beginning of the race and went right by Lando and ended up leading for a little while. Can we talk about Alonso and his freaking wit and genius? And that clever move, which I'm a little confused about at the same time. So really quickly to remind everybody and set it up. Alonso on the warm-up lap, on the installation lap going to the grid, was actually driving off course and checking the runoff at turn two and the bollards and whatever those styrofoam, whatever the heck they call them, what they had to drive around, basically the, what do they call it? The escape route. And it was odd that he was doing it, but it caught the eye of a couple of folks and it caught the eye of some commentators and it caught the eyes and ears of others, but nobody exactly knew what he was doing, why he was driving off. But we found out on lap one at the beginning of the race, he took the exit when it got too crowded and he gained some positions, and that was a gray area in the rules. Now here's my why I'm confused about this. 2019, Sergio Perez, Paul Ricard, took the escape route on opening lap, gained some positions, got hit with a penalty because they said he gained an advantage, although he did do what they were supposed to do. So why are they getting a pass now? Because I haven't seen any rule changes. Have you heard about this? I can't find anything.
So no, I haven't heard about this. And all I will say is that like this year has not followed any of the precedents. So like this, not that it surprises me, but it doesn't really surprise me. There seems to be a whole new set of rules for 2021. So that's my answer. And what I'll say is like, I thought it was really clever of Alonso to have done that. And I think that's like, he's just testing out. This is his year back in. So he's like testing the capabilities, but I don't know if he knew he would get away with this, but like, you know, like good for him. I think that's part of the strategy. Try things. Like, what is it? What's the saying? It's like, do things and ask for apologize afterwards. But like, he didn't seem to have to.
So I was trying to figure this out. I couldn't myself. So I'm hoping I'm going to be able to do a little more research and try to understand why. But I said this two episodes ago where I said I'm no longer with the stewards on things because their flip-flopping is out of control. And I said I'm part of Jeremy Clarkson's cult now in that they're ruining the sport. But
like, what's happening? It's like unpredictable. Like we say this through and through. Formula One is unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yet it's so, like, you know, consistent in very unpredictable ways. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not that upset because I like Alonso. So.
You know, like we get upset when it like works against the people that we like. And we're like, where are the rules? Sure. You know?
For sure. A fantastic opening lap, the back and forth from those top like 5-6 cars, Lewis losing position at the start, gaining it back. Incredible. Charles Leclerc's opening couple of laps and he gained like 4 spots or something and wildly amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Max played it real cool, did an incredible job. I mean, I read somewhere that he gained the most positions in a race since 2019, since Vettel, starting from the back. So
I'm just going to interject. And I think like that's the Max that we've been missing these last 4 to 5 races. I think like I'd say since Silverstone, this was a composed Max. He had a job and he went out there and he did it. Like there were three
no shows, right? I mean, if you think about it, Silverstone, he was booted. So technically speaking, he was out of the race. Spa didn't happen. Monza, there was a DNF for him. Like, it's like we haven't seen him. Well, Zandvoort, we got to see him race in Zandvoort, but we've only gotten him see now race a couple of times in the last 5 years. You're right. Yeah, that's right.
So. But it's not like that, but like you would have thought he would have went out there almost frantic. Like, I need to get, not only do I need to get to the front of the grid, but I need to, like, there's a mission to get in front of Lewis and beat Lewis. But there was a composure to Max this race. And even when in the post interviews, he was just like, this was great. I had a really good time and this was like a good fight. And, you know, I'm happy with where things landed, where I ended up. And I think this is the Max that we've been looking for, this like composed, strategic, head down, get it done. And he looked like he was kind of having fun. I don't know.
His attitude at the end of the race was wonderful. He was so positive. They were so happy. They took it as a victory. I mean, realistically, that you cannot really do much better than that. I mean,
100%.
Even if he'd made it up to fourth and fifth, that would have been pretty amazing. So the fact that he made it so far was pretty awesome. Lando, let's talk Lando. I know he's one of your boys. What an incredible race. And I think we can talk about, I don't even know where to start, but I'm going to ask a question and it's kind of a loaded question. I want to see what your thoughts are on this.
So I'm a little scared because usually I have like Titus or David, no shows like to bounce this off of.
Yeah.
So here we go.
So David's. Yeah. They're not here today, but what Lando, I have a question. The question is, was Lando's decision for not going on inters, was it Lando's lack of maturity that lost him the race, inexperience, or did he take calculated risk and roll the dice?
So I don't think, so it's interesting because you said like lack of maturity or experience. I actually think those are two different things.
I agree.
Wasn't a lack of maturity. I think it was a lack of experience. And that experience comes in the way of, you know, something that Max has, or Max displayed that race, composure. He was frantic. He was scared. He didn't know the whole race what to do, with that first place, like even him yelling at his like engineers, and not yelling at them like a Tsunoda yelling at them, but he was just like, shut up, just let me like, let me do this. It was, he's really not been in that position before. He was so close to getting the podium that he doesn't know what that tastes like. And he panicked. And I think he didn't want to ruin what was the momentum that he had, but really, I think the team wasn't, and maybe this is like, I'm going too far in off the question, but the team wasn't firm enough with him. They empowered him to, it was great that they empowered him, but they should have been like, all right, you're making the wrong call. We're pulling you back, come in. So I think this was a lack of experience. And for real, the next time this happens, you will bet he will not make this mistake again. And he has the potential to get to that position again. So I think all this to say, it wasn't a lack of maturity, it was a lack of experience. And it's a very big difference. So you go, Lando, you keep going, you keep fighting.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a couple of folks saying like, look how Mercedes and Lewis made the right decision. And I kind of, I'm gonna comment on that. Technically, Lewis didn't make the right decision.
No.
Lewis wanted to chase Lando down. He talked about it even after the race with Lando. I saw a really cool back and forth with them, smiles and all. It was fantastic. He said he wanted to stay out, but the team insisted that he came in. And so he did, which again, McLaren maybe should have pushed a little harder knowing what they knew with the data. And I agree with you in that, which is why we worded the question the way we did. Mm-hmm. Maturity and experience are two different things.
Yeah.
I do agree that he's supremely mature, especially for his age. It's incredible. Despite how fun he has and the banter he does with Twitch and everything else he does in his life. As a racing driver, he's quite mature. At the end of the race, he took full responsibility. He didn't say anything about the team. And he said, you know, I made a decision and I own up. I'll accept that responsibility, which was awesome to hear and see. It's kind of like when Charles does his things. You always hear Charles taking full responsibility for things, showing incredible maturity for their age. I think the experience bit is explained by Lewis finally listening to his team and Lando not wanting to listen to his team. And I don't think that's a maturity factor. I think that's an experience thing. Like, okay, look, we've been in this together. But I also think it was an easier decision for Mercedes and Lewis because they were chasing and they weren't racing Lando. They were racing Max and they had a gap. They had a little bit more of a gap. So they had a little bit more of an opportunity to make that choice to like let him stay out and then we'll call him in next round if we really have to. So, and also they did, they brought him back in. It's a learning curve for everyone in this case. I think it's great for Lando that it happened now in a point of his career where he's not fighting for the championship, so that way he can use that bit of data in his arsenal later. So 100%. That's kind of the positive I think he should take away from all this, although he said he was gutted, and I'm sure everybody was like in his camp, even though like, but man, he could have had his first win. That's that. I get why he's so heartbroken.
100%. I think, and this isn't my original thought, but I thought it was so poetic that you had someone racing for their first win and you had someone racing for their 100th win. Like that
is
quite like beautiful in F1. And I don't think that there's any confidence lost in little Lando. And like, it almost revealed that the way that the team was talking to him, like, this team has full confidence in him and they've empowered him to make these decisions and they back him up and they win and they die by that. And that's really encouraging to see, like that symbiosis in a team is fantastic.
Yeah, dude, it's for somebody at such a young age to have that much backing from a juggernaut like McLaren, right? Not just one of the teams at the bottom of the grid, right? It's one of the top tier teams. So I'm sure we're gonna be seeing tons of Lando in the future, and we did. Like Saturday and Sunday this weekend was amazing to see these young guys go at it. Four power unit swaps this weekend with four penalties. Max starting at the back, that was the big one, and Leclerc starting right in front of him, and then Latifi taking a power unit swap, and Bottas. So here's the big question for power units. It's looking like Lewis is going to have to do it at some point, and or Mercedes is going to have to make the decision to take the risk. What Max did this weekend was a huge blow to that decision for Mercedes because he minimized damage so much by making it all the way back to second place, especially at a track that passing isn't necessarily the the most, it's difficult. So now Mercedes has to deal with that moving forward. When are they going to make their power unit swap decision? At what circuit? And whereas Red Bull has already done it now, and Red Bull might have to do it again at some point as well. It looks like they're going to have to do one more. So that's going to be quite interesting. That's a storyline that will develop over the rest of the season. And on top of that, go ahead.
No, as I say, like just speculatively, like I think that reveals, and we've been kind of like skeptical of Red Bull as of late, but I think what that might have shown is that they're looking at the bigger picture, where Mercedes might be looking at race per race per race, almost like, you know, like they're just living for the next race, where Red Bull's like, all right, what's the big picture here? Where's the strategy? Like this almost looks really super premeditated, which I think is. I underestimated Red Bull. I thought they were just like there in the fight and fighting and digging and like whatever. And it's like, no, maybe we're a little bit more strategic. Yeah. And that's the best position you want to be. You want your enemies to underestimate you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, I think personally, Red Bull is actually probably one of the top strategic teams. In my opinion, they're probably better than Mercedes. I wrote that in my Red Bull story on the website. plug. And go check that out. Yeah, because we've seen that over the years that they've been able to outmaneuver Ferrari and they've been able to outmaneuver Mercedes and others over the years, even with a smaller team and a smaller budget. And that's relative, right? So, but now Mercedes, the other big thing that I was going to say, like besides what happened this weekend for Red Bull, Honda launched their new energy store for the car, which is more efficient, has more power, and is a lighter package. And so that gives Max even more speed in the car and more opportunity. So it's going to be a much even bigger uphill battle for Mercedes and Lewis for the rest of the season.
I think Christian said that, like, he's like, you know, Mercedes has been in power for 7 years and the tides are changing. It's like, I think he knew more at that time. I think this was a, I think he had done this interview. It was Beyond the Grid, probably back, I want to say, in June. I think this goes to the narrative that they know what's coming down the pipeline. They are much more strategic. They want us to think, they want to give the impression that they're like more rock and roll and like off the skin of their teeth, but they have things in the works. And it's really impressive to see this metabolize. Because yeah. I think we as fans is exciting because we can only guess what the next step was and they drop these sort of Easter eggs, but I can't imagine, like, you know, being a team and having, you know, skin in the game, just trying to anticipate Red Bull's next move, especially if you're Mercedes.
Yeah. And the way Max has been driving with the whole, I don't, despite everything that's been said and done by the media, the guy's still like, full in, all in, every lap, every corner, every race, no matter what, which is amazing for the sport. We've needed somebody like him for a while.
Absolutely. And
we
need to look at
whether you love him or whether you love it or hate it. It's fantastic for entertainment for the sport. So
absolutely.
Let's talk Carlos Sainz. For me, most underrated driver this season so far. He is not getting nearly enough love. He's got 3 podiums now, led this race, crushing it with a car that doesn't belong up there, and still finished on the podium. He still pulled it off. It's not a podium car, right? So he was P2 in Monaco, P3 in Hungary, and now P3 in Russia. This could have been if this race had started wet, I would have predicted that Carlos could have probably won this race. The reason being is I think what we're seeing with the Ferrari, and we've been seeing it all year when you go back and review, it's not as good on tires as some of the other cars. They always seem to have to pit earlier. And so it just doesn't seem to do well on those mediums. It doesn't like that medium compound. Those softer compounds, I should say, because we had the softest compounds of the set. Going into this race. So
I'm trying to remember when he pit and I can't.
Before all the top guys, it was before everybody by like a few laps, but it was crazy early, relatively speaking.
And I think like when you saw him talking about, like, he was not that he was disappointed with his podium, his third place, but he was just like, out of like, I think even he thought at one point, I'm not going to make it on the podium. And yeah, I wouldn't say he's the most underrated driver, but he's like definitely underrated in general. And I think that Ferrari did a fantastic job bringing him on. It was a great call.
Who is your most underrated driver this season then so far?
You're going to make me say it again.
Yes.
He didn't do well this race and I hate it, but Gasly. Listen, Gasly and Carlos are just not spoken about enough. They are just like phenomenal in their management, in their composure, in their feedback. They're there for the team. They're there to provide feedback. They're there to develop. They're not as flashy, I think, as everyone else, but they're just so goddamn consistent.
Yeah.
And I think Carlos displayed such tenacity, and I think it even surprises Ferrari, I think, at some points.
Okay, yes. So he pulled ahead of Leclerc in the points after this race, and that's something incredible, because everybody touts Leclerc as the number one, which he is. But something that I'm loving about this season is, and we talked about this last year and at the beginning of this season about Carlos, which is we never really knew where he lied in the pecking order of things, because when he was at Toro Rosso, he was alongside rookies, which were not cemented, meaning we didn't really know where they lied as well. When he went to Renault, it was so short lived. When he went to McLaren, we didn't know at that time where Lando really lied in the pecking order. And now we're seeing where Lando is probably going to lie in the pecking order as well. Mm-hmm. And now finally we have him against a known quantity of Charles.
Yeah.
Or how Charles compared to Vettel, how Charles has now been racing here last season and this season. And Carlos is the real deal. Like we are seeing Carlos level up. He's coming to grips with the car. Shaky start in the beginning of the year, was fast, but was a little bit less consistent. We still see blitzes of speed out of Charles that are probably a little bit higher than Carlos, but the consistency out of Carlos has gotten amazing. So let's see what happens next season and or the rest of this year, because Ferrari are looking, if that car comes out proper next year, Ferrari are looking like they're going to be devilish for the competition.
Yeah.
The speed out of those two guys is looking amazing. It's looking really good for them for their future. So
And you've had drivers now drive with that car that's not performed that well. So imagine putting them in these cars that are hopefully much more consistent and perform. It's like they're, you know, we always, it's that classic question. You could deduce it to that. Is it the driver or is it the car? And it's like, it's never one or the other. It's a perfect synergy of both. And I think that's what you're really going to get out of a performance of Ferrari next year with Charles and Carlos. And we just see Carlos, we're always like, oh, he's that adaptable driver. And now he has an opportunity to actually stay with the journey of the car, or he's been provided with that journey. And actually, like, you know, he has a teammate in which he doesn't necessarily have to, like, there's no friction, but there's competition. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to work both in their accounts, and Charles is going to be pushed and Carlos is going to be pushed. And there's some good, like, companionship at the same time. I think, I don't want to jinx it, Ferrari has a great recipe for a great sauce.
Yeah.
And I'm here to slurp it up.
I think so too. All right. Here's going to be the tough question tonight, or the tough argument, because we all love Sergio so much. A fact has revealed itself. Russell has now matched Sergio Perez on points over the last six races in a Williams with 16 points. And when I first saw that, I took a step back and I was like, is that really a big deal? And yes, because I thought about it. It's not one race where he matched him. It's not two races. It's not three races. It's not even four races. It's six races. You're talking almost what, like 30% of the season.
Yeah.
So that he's now matched him on points in a car that has no business matching the top car in the sport. He's got one of the bottom tier cars and he's racing against one of the top tier. So has Red Bull made a mistake in signing Perez too early? Is Perez not all that we thought he would be? What's going on? What do you, when you hear that and see that, and I know you love Sergio, we all love Sergio, but like, what's going on? What do you think? Is Russell just this insanely phenomenal person that we don't even don't roll the eyes. Russell's fast. Forget. He's not going to be with a shirt off on my show. Don't worry about that part. So
I think like I wouldn't mind. There's several things at play in my humble opinion. In my opinion, counts for nothing. But I will entitle everyone to it. I think if I'm wearing my tightest hat, Titus said it in a couple episodes ago. There's something interesting going on with that second seat of the Red Bull. I'm not going to call it the curse. I'm going to say it's been built around. I'm truly convinced that it's been built around Max Verstappen, and you've now had three drivers. Well, Sergio will be the third driver going through it and having a difficult time. And you could say it's a rookie. You could say it's like a rookie being Albon. You could say it's Pierre Gasly. He didn't have the confidence or the car didn't fit him. Then you have Sergio Perez, who is a consistent, or he was a consistent driver who has proven to be adaptable in several cars because he has moved around, and it's just not working. So I think, you know, I think Red Bull has this sort of PR issue in which they need to sign another driver because they don't want to be stuck in this position of bringing up questions of, is Red Bull toxic? Do they train? Do they develop their drivers? They don't want to answer those questions. However, so they signed him on because I think it then takes away from some sort of, or detracts from, or maybe it invites actually questions of, well, then is it the mechanics of the car? So they might solve one problem by saying, when you sign Sergio on, it's like, okay, they're interested in developing their driver. They're interested in developing this program, but then it invites that, like, what's the problem with the mechanics of the car? What's going on there? And then, so that's what I'll say. I don't think it's a Sergio problem. I think it's a car problem. I think it's a mechanical problem. There's no synergy there. And then I have a question for you. Do we stop thinking of the Williams as a bad car, as a slow car?
So that's wonderful. It's a great question because Latifi has been doing exceptionally well, as you know, comparatively to his last season's performance and the other drivers at the bottom of the grid. So I would say that the Williams is not the bottom of the grid like it was the last couple seasons. Haas clearly is. Alpha is then in place, and then I think we have a Williams that's competing against tech, sometimes Alpines, sometimes the Astons. But I'm going to back up just a little bit and say, to cure their PR issue that they've been experiencing this last season and last couple of seasons, because they've been so dog eat dog with their drivers, with Gasly and Albon. They probably could have cured that with bringing Gasly back up and putting Sergio in the second Alpha seat, or in the first Alpha seat, technically speaking. Who knows if they tried? We don't know, right? We don't know if that conversation occurred or not, but I feel like that could have been a solution. I don't know why Gasly wouldn't have said yes. I know he was wronged there. At least that's what he felt and everything. But I still imagine he would want to go back to one of the top tier seats if he was given the opportunity. I agree. I don't think it's speculative. I think it's, I would put money down on saying that that car is definitely built around Max. Mm-hmm. For sure. His input's going to go first. And so therefore, yes, it is heavily built around Max. It took Sergio some time to come to grips with it at the beginning of the year, but Sergio's biggest problem is probably still qualifying. He finds himself in positions where it becomes harder for him to move up the field because he's not qualifying well. That's probably, in my opinion, his biggest issue. But with that said, I still don't see an excuse for why a Russell and a Williams, because even if that car is not at the very back, it's still, what, the seventh place team beating, or seventh fastest car. Maybe you can make the argument that it's the sixth fastest car beating the first place car. So I don't know where Perez's response to that is going to be if this continues the rest of the year. Right now it's just the last six races, so obviously Perez is well ahead in points for the majority of the year, so but it doesn't look good for him when stuff like this hits the headlines. it's not good for his future past 2022, and I'm sure even with you're saying it's a PR issue, I don't think Red Bull is going to give two craps next season if Perez in the first 3, 4, 5 races isn't performing, that they'd do the same thing they did to Gasly in 2019.
I know, definitely probably a clause of some sort. Like that.
Yeah, right. So,
or it's a sponsorship that's protecting him.
It's possible. It's possible. Who knows? I mean, he is phenomenal at feedback. We've heard a lot of the engineers talk about that and what that have worked with him, that he's phenomenal with feedback. He's an absolute, he is a good driver. He is a fantastic driver, but they need to figure something out for him for quali. If he doesn't just have that outright speed, then they can't. But if there's something else they can do, that's going to benefit them so much going into the future.
I still have hope for Perez. I think he belongs on the grid, but as we've known, just because you belong on the grid doesn't mean you earn it.
No.
And sort of Red Bull is sort of that, like, proof positive of that mandate. So, yeah, I hope next season there's an improvement in Perez, because he's a great addition to the sport.
Yeah, agreed. I don't want to see him leave. I mean, we never want to see, we didn't want to see the Hulkenberg leave. We didn't want to see Grosjean leave. We didn't want to see Magnussen leave. We lost all of them.
Yeah, I know who I would like to see leave, but we don't need to say that.
And moving on. So we have, man, Ocon. I want to talk about Ocon too. And the other, I think, maybe premature signing. Alonso continues to do these things where he places himself in like sixth place and Ocon's outside of the top 10. And so what's going on there? The pendulum swung pretty dramatically on that team as well. We're not hearing anything from Ocon with explanation as to why. It's not mechanical issues. What are your thoughts this part of the year now?
Does anyone care? That's my question.
Oh, shit.
About Ocon, sorry.
Yes, we care about Ocon.
Sorry, I mean, I care about Ocon the person, but quite frankly, since his win, he's been quite, like, not memorable. You know, you're just like, oh, there's Ocon.
I mean, besides the win, name one other race this year where that you can remember that he performed.
I think you probably have an answer, but I...
Exceptionally. I don't know. Nothing really stands out that was truly exceptional.
No, you would remember more than I would, and nothing comes to my mind. Truly think Alonso is the star of that team, and, you know, he's putting that car in places that, like, Ocon should be doing, and especially as a GP winner. And Alonso's just having fun. You know what I mean? Like, you see that, like, he's just...
His demeanor at races and in interviews and everything is wonderful to see.
Yeah, but you bring up a really good point. I think, you know, if we talk about premature signings, I don't think of Perez, I think of Ocon.
Yeah. I'm going to stick by my commentary that I said earlier, and maybe hopefully it'll change by the end of the year.
Yeah.
But Ocon was signed too soon. And yeah. I do think Perez was signed too soon as well. But we'll see. We will agree. I have the results in front of me now. Daniel, fourth place.
Okay.
It's looking good for Daniel.
It's where the McLarens should be. Finally. Like, this is where you see him in the support role. Like, this is great.
Forget that Lando was leading the race for a minute, and it's looking good for Daniel. Like, that's a phenomenal performance, that regardless if he was a couple of positions behind where his teammate could have finished. So I think Daniel, that he needed this. He was fighting basically up there. Hopefully in Turkey this coming weekend, same thing. Hopefully we get to see more performance out of him. So we can officially say that's 3 in a row and he's back, because I'm not saying it yet.
That is the magic.
But he never left, according to him. But
sorry. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
I was like, is it 3 that we say? Like, is that the magic number? 3 in a row?
I mean, 3 in a row is pretty pretty fantastic performance. So especially at three tracks that are very different from one another. So
okay.
I would give it to him.
But he never left, so it's fine. I'm sorry. I love Danny. I just keep going.
I'm a big Dan. I don't know anybody that's not a Ricardo fan. Exactly. But we all want to see him do well. So more about this race, or we're gonna get into other topics?
More about this race. I think, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if this is completely like just qualitative, but people aren't typically excited for Sochi.
Nobody is. No, and I think David and Titus in the last podcast Titus definitely trashed Sochi. He doesn't like it. But I think I'm in the edge case for most races. I can really get a lot out of a lot of races by just watching strategy, watching the data, and seeing what's happening. And I'm always entertained. I know I'm an edge case. So Sochi has never really upset me. I don't think it's as processionary as people make it out to be, but maybe they don't get as much passing. But realistically, you don't get a lot of passing in Imola, but Imola was very exciting because there was a lot of offs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because there's not necessarily a ton of offs in Sochi, and then it makes it feel a little bit more like a procession. So
I had a good time.
I thought so. It's to date the most memorable Sochi race. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I could agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you guys said it in the last podcast, no German Grand Prix for 2022. Huge disappointment. We're not getting another German Grand Prix in 2022. That's going to have to wait. Sprint races are in the news again.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah. And I said this last time, I'm pretty sure they're going to be here to stay because they're trying really hard to work out this format. So now they're talking about a sprint championship award where the sprint races accrue their own points in a separate category for a sprint championship. So it's like almost like a second series within the series.
I think that makes sense. Like, I think that substantiates it significantly, that it could provide some sort of prestige to potentially a team, like maybe an Alpine, maybe a McLaren, and give them that sort of stage. I don't know. But this whole, like, I don't know, I can't wrap my brain around the point system. And maybe it's just because I don't want to, but I think this makes sense. A little series within a series. Give them a participation trophy. Why not?
Yeah, I prefer that over the current, to be honest with you. I feel like it'll give certain drivers the drive to want to push harder whilst giving the ones that are fighting for the main championship, maybe not as much, which will, in that case, see more overlap. Where drivers pass other drivers in situations that we wouldn't. So,
and I think you nailed it. It showcases different types of talent within the drivers that may not necessarily be able to showcase those in long form racing. So we might be seeing the genesis of a different type of racing, like maybe in 25 years.
Team points, man, a team race. I still want to see the tag team. Okay. A lot of people hate that idea, but I freaking love it. I'd love to see that. Anyway,
maybe this is the start of it. Like, we're seeing.
I hope so, man. That would be amazing.
Danny Aston about his win in Monza. He won sprint in, was it Monza? Yeah, Monza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aston is getting stronger next season. Mm. We talked about their new tech center that's being developed now, and it's going to be the new F1 factory of the future, as they're kind of placing it. Martin Whitmarsh is returning to F1 with Aston Martin. He had 25 years experience with McLaren from 89 to 2014 in various roles, which included CEO and team principal. Apologies for that. That's a huge win for them. Somebody like him with that level of experience that can oversee various functions on the engineering side and the process, that's going to be a big addition to their team. Amazing that they got him back.
Which I should say, nice cap.
Yeah, I'm plugging them today. This is coincidence. We talked about every team, so realistically, I could have been wearing anything.
You do have an arsenal of like all the team uniforms. So
I have an insane number of hats for F1. Yeah, it's bad. I'm getting yelled at now at home for it because I'm using closet space for hats. So
interesting. It's very interesting how, you know, we think of F1 as like the top tier of innovation, which can be debated, but we're really seeing Aston Martin dedicate themselves to that type of innovation.
Yes. And so I made a comment online about that, about how we need more people like Lawrence in the sport, because it's nice to have the privateers.
Yeah.
Technically speaking. But mostly because you have someone like Lawrence who has the assets, resource, know-how, and the passion and love. That particular point right there is going to drive that team so much further. And I can't wait to see them like on their uphill charge, because I'm sure, I mean, look how far they've already come.
So I actually have a question for you, and maybe this is detracting completely from your point. Do you think the pairing of Vettel and Stroll is conducive to the winning package?
I think that'll become an issue and a question when they have a car that looks like it's competing at the top within them. And therefore, they'll need to make the decision as to which one of the drivers needs to go. And right now, they don't have to think about it. They have a driver who's touted as being the top driver in the sport for development, being Vettel, and feedback. Yeah. And then they have a young, quick driver that can do whatever they need him to do at the moment. So I think they're fulfilling roles that the team needs right now. So yes, I think it's okay right now. That question, ask me that again next season if they're looking like their championship contender, because then I will say the slowest driver has to go. That's all there is to it. Like we talked about this, I don't even remember when, but the reality is the first thing a management person, if somebody asks you how do we make ourselves better, first thing you can look at is, well, we can always replace one of the slower driver. Yep. And immediately, yeah, level up there. So I don't know if you like that answer or not, but
I think it's a diplomatic answer. But next year I'm coming for you.
Okay. I'll be ready, maybe. Monaco's format's changing next year. Up till now, traditionally at least, Monaco's been running free practices on Thursdays, FP1, FP2. Mm-hmm. They don't run on Friday, and they resume Saturday, Sunday. Next year, they're going to go to the typical format that we see at most races, which is the Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
The Monegasque will have a riot. Riot.
Doesn't mean anything for us, but
no.
Yeah, for anybody else. Fine. What else do we have? We have, before moving on, we have Turkey coming up this weekend. Let's preview Turkey and what happened last year.
Is it next weekend?
They moved it, right?
I think it's next weekend.
Yes. And yeah. I'm looking at the calendar right now. I forgot. It was originally slated, I think, for this weekend. Yeah, and now it's moved to the 8th. You're right. I'm sorry. I have 3 F1 calendars on my calendar because they keep updating it and I don't delete my old one. Yeah. So what are your thoughts? Turkey was pretty fun last year and pretty chaotic.
What are my thoughts? God, can you ask me in a week?
Who has more momentum? Here's a question for you. First of all, congratulations to Lewis for 100 wins. We didn't really touch up on that very much. 100 victories. Nobody's hit triple digits ever. I mean, nobody's ever won more than 91 until him as well. Michael's the closest with 91 victories. Michael Schumacher. One of the highest win percentages in the sport. I mean, he won the race. He's coming out of this smiles of galore. Mm-hmm. Now takes a 2-point lead. Although Max did come out of this with smiles galore and probably doesn't have as much anxiety anymore because taking on the new power unit and all worked out. So like, I feel like they're on par. What do you think in terms of going into this with energy into this coming race?
So it's interesting. I think the impression I get, I think like Lewis needed this. He needed this, I think, for his own confidence, for the team. Let's talk about the win, the 100th, what it means. the Century win. I think they, so there was a question on social media, and maybe it was rhetorical, and they were like, what other, can any other racer make 100 wins? And I think the answer is yes. I think Lewis has broken the seal. And I think that as innovation comes forward, as we improve the races, maybe have like, I don't know how the format of the sprint races, if they'll count to, you know, the overall count of wins, but I think they'd said like, with more races on the calendar and the longevity of the drivers and the fact that they're bringing in drivers at such a young age and racing later, I think we're going to see another within our lifetime, another driver hit 100 wins. That's what I think. Just based on lifespan and number of races in the calendar, and seeing if they tack on maybe the sort of, if they count the sprint races as wins, or maybe it's going to be like for every two sprint races you win, it's one, it counts as one race. So, okay. That, so back to the whole, like in the whole, like sort of constructors or the driver's championship, I think that Lewis needed this win. I think given what we know or what we can speculate about Red Bull, I think this was like, they took the L, but for the long term. Like, I think going into Turkey, I think Max is like, we're back on track. We're going to win. We took the L for the power unit and we let Lewis think that he won. But I think like, I think that there's like some, I think Max is, we're going to see a fierce Max. We saw a little bit more of a composed Max. Max is going to come back full force in Turkey. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think Lewis needed this win for his confidence. He didn't have a great, even though he won in the last race, he didn't win the last race, sorry. He got, right, so he DNF'd. I think he needed this win for his confidence. I think he's going in with false sense of security for Turkey.
Oh, wow, that far? Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm just going to make it bold. Let's make it bold.
Yeah, for sure. I love it.
It's highly speculative.
We talked about, you mentioned a couple of things I'm going to touch up on, which is being the most winningest racer, the century goal and everything. And people always talk about, you know, the comparisons of past drivers to current drivers. And I saw a statistic come out that showed like win percentage per driver, which ties into what you were saying about you think we're going to see drivers in the future beat this record.
Yeah.
I'm going to stand on the other side to offer a different perspective.
Please.
First of all, to compare Fangio and Lewis and Ascari and Lewis and Jim Clark and all these guys is in my opinion, silly.
Yeah.
I don't think you can for two reasons. Number one, when you compare somebody like Fangio and Ascari who raced in seasons that were like 5 to 10 races a year, so basically it took them 4 seasons to equate the number of races we're doing in one season these days, more or less, almost 2 to 3 seasons basically to equate. So that's not fair. The other thing is the driving and the cars were completely different then. The reliability was completely different then. So many things are totally different. So to compare drivers across eras and to say one is better than the other is, I think,
it's not apples to apples.
No, it just draws on too many fallacies, in my opinion, like to say it's comparable. So it's amazing. Lewis still, nothing to take away from him. Obviously, that's not at all what I'm saying. But I think I think there's going to be, although there are more races now, I don't know that drivers will have the same opportunity to win as many in the future because of this sliding scale rule. So the sliding scale rule to me was one of those things I was really, it's like a big asterisk for me because it feels synthetic. It feels like they're synthetically pushing around competition because when the second place car has more time to develop than the first place car, it's just like you're giving the second place car more opportunity to catch up. And then next season, the second, it's going to keep going back and forth in the season after that. So these top teams that are so close together, you really do now have to have the best driver with the best car, which they say is the case anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe championships won can be matched and beaten. Mm-hmm. But I think as far as number of races, we'll see. And again, also how the points evolve over the next future. I mean, this is all speculative, right? So
of course,
because the point system today is very different than the point system was 50s, 60s, 70s, like it always changes. So however the point system is established as well could deter from that. But I think it's one, you know, every record always gets beaten, I feel like. It's not like everybody thought Michael Johnson's record in sprint was going to, in the 200, was never going to be beaten. And finally Usain did it, even though he, you know, it is what it is. He beat it. It's not by a huge margin, but he beat it. Everything can be beaten. They talk about Michael Phelps' gold medals. They talk about so many things. So yeah, maybe. It's possible. I think it's going to be a little bit harder. I think the wins number is going to be a lot harder than, I think championships even might be easier than the wins number.
That's interesting.
But time will tell. Who knows?
Who knows? We're here for now.
Predictions for Turkey. Max. You want me to go first?
I'm going to say Max.
Yeah. Who's your podium? Who's your podium? Give me your top five. Give me your top five for Turkey.
Top five.
We didn't talk much about Botas. Oh, we totally forgot to mention Botas.
Are you surprised?
And his supposed, you know, I'm doing good for the team by letting Max buy, not letting Max buy. There was a lot of controversy in that afterwards.
So it was so interesting because the commentators were just like, he's gained so much new confidence, like, look, now that he's on another team, or he's been promised to another team or signed on to another team, whatever. And then you have Toto yelling at him on him being like, get through and get into the points now. And you're like, oh, okay. Motas. I mean, what do you want to say? Like the guy's just trying his best, man. Like
I honestly think he's let down since his contract signing with Alpha. It doesn't seem like he cares as much. I think the opposite. I think maybe he looks like he's happy and reinvigorated him personally, but on track.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's like, you know, I don't have to dance.
What did he place in Monza? Third? Right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Because it was Danny first and or was it second? I can't even remember. That's terrible.
Yeah, he was on the podium and he can't remember.
I have it right here. I'll look it up. So bad. I'm usually good at this.
You know what? No, but you know what it is? It's like, it feels like a lifetime ago.
Dude.
The races, like, and that's fine because we're reinvigorated by all the new races that come up. So yeah. Bocas was third.
No. Yeah, it was third because we had the McLaren one too. That's right.
Yeah.
So,
my God.
Yeah, I don't need to look anymore.
You know how much we forget? Like, you're inundated by so data bad. And new wins and new information. Danny, we haven't forgot you.
Me being away for a week, I lost it all.
You're in Canada.
Definitely. Yeah, dude.
Botas, I mean, like.
I think Max takes it in Turkey.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think we're going to see. I think it's going to kind of be a more of a normal, or what we would have expected from earlier in the year, where it's like the Mercedes and the Red Bulls in Turkey. I don't know that we're going to see a McLaren surprise, a Ferrari surprise, or a Gasly surprise.
I love how you're like team driver.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Right. It's not an Alpha Tower.
Yuki surprised himself, right? He even said so. He's surprised he got re-signed. So.
Yeah. I mean. I actually think that McLaren might get on the podium. Lando will get on the podium in Turkey. I think third place.
Third place for Lando. Okay. So you've got Max, Lewis, Lando?
Yep.
Ooh.
That's my podium.
That's spicy. I hope that's the case. That sounds like a fun race.
Let's get lost in Istanbul. Let's do it.
Yeah. Good. That was nice.
What about yours? Is it like going to be Max, Lewis, Bottas or Perez or...
I think Max, Lewis, and if everything goes well for Valtteri, yes, Valtteri, in terms of quality, as long as nothing gets caught, all things going normal, I think Valtteri will be the third driver up there. I think the McLarens will be fighting with Bottas for that other position, and then the Ferraris will show up too. So I don't know where Perez is going to be. You notice I didn't say his name.
I did notice.
I don't know. I think Perez will probably be in that mashup in the top seven as well, but I think he's going to be doing the same thing he did in this race, which is just trying to figure his way through there and not going to be really supplying much support to Max at the top. So
do you think Russell will finish in the points
in Turkey?
Yeah.
I think he'll qualify well. So like this race was a little bit of an interesting one for him because obviously qualifying was a little bit of a crapshoot because of the timing with the rain. So, yeah. But, and his car was never going to stay up there unless there was a downpour. So mm-hmm. him going back to 10th, I still think that was a great phenomenon. That's like the best that car can do more or less, like between 8th and 12th. Right. So that was still, I think, a good race for him, but I think in Turkey, again, all things being equal, I think 10th is like, if he gets 10th, phenomenal. That's great again. If he can get into Q3, that's great. He missed Q3 in when was it? Not this last one, the one before in Monza, right?
Yeah.
So this circuit
outperform him, I think, in Monza.
So this circuit might be more conducive to them. Mm-hmm. With the nature of the track itself. I don't know what Alpine's going to do here. They're like them and Aston.
You mean what Alonso will do, not Alpine?
Yeah, I actually think Aston will probably do better than Alpine here. And yeah, overall, but they've both been my asterisks. Like, I cannot figure them out.
They haven't been, like, so
Alonso keeps outdriving that team. But as far as like Sebastian's performance and Stroll's performance, like, I can't figure out what that car is doing well and not. the amount of back and forth we're seeing in them.
It's their beta testing year, quite frankly. But you're right. It's been incredibly inconsistent.
It's crazy.
Asterisk is a polite way of putting it.
Yeah. So.
Haas, you forgot about Haas. Where are they going?
You know where Haas is going to be. Come on. Where's Haas going to be?
I was gutted that Mick had to DNF. Just.
Yeah, that was his first DNF, wasn't it? So he'd had a perfect year so far. I don't think he'd DNF'd yet.
I want to say no, because Marzipan had said something like, I've outperformed him.
Maybe outperforming and did not finish, two things, right?
So that's, but I'm trying to think if he'd mentioned do not finish. But yeah, anyways, I was gutted.
Yeah, I can't recall, but I thought that was his first DNF. Nikita isn't as far behind as he was. He's doing better. You know, it's going to, again, it's a year for him that in some ways, in a lot of ways, I still feel like strongly about this. It's a great first year to be in a team that has no expectations out of you in terms of where you're placing the car, since they know the car is going to go undeveloped and is going to be last place from day one. It's incredibly, probably stress building, lots of anxiety and frustration for him, but as far as building yourself up, and if that's his focus and if he continues to remain on that, which I think we're seeing Mick do really well.
Yeah.
Mick just is driving against himself. He's not thinking or saying anything else in news and media. I don't know that Nikita's fully in that boat, but I hope he gets to that point to better develop himself.
Yeah, we need some maturity, that's for sure.
What's that?
We need some maturity.
Yes. So, yeah. And then I don't know what's going on with Gio in that second seat. We still haven't heard that yet. So we don't want to dive into the driver.
So his radio failed during Sochi, which I totally missed until after the fact.
Yeah. And then he's going to have a rough second part of this season. I don't know. He had a couple of mistakes in this race. Didn't he have a mistake in quali? And he also lost it in quali as well. So this is going to be an interesting second half of the year for him. I'm wishing the best, but I think there's too much talent sitting in the wings waiting to get to grab at that seat. And I don't know how they're going to justify that. Unless they have other plans, unless it's just going to be a development car. So I don't know. Yeah, again, going with the whole Aston, what I said earlier about Aston with Lance and Sebastian, since now they have Valtteri. So
let's see.
We will find out. Yeah, super excited. Turkey's okay. An incredible race. The most famous corner of that track is turn 8. They just corner that keeps on going and keeps on going and keeps on going. Can't wait to see that again. A lot of fun times here. Every time they race here, it's always been good. So
I'm excited it's back on the calendar because it was one of those will they not, and finally, like, hopefully they don't cancel it. But we're there.
Got it. Yeah. So enjoy it, because again, you don't know if it's coming back next season or the years following. So I think it's kind of a treat. I don't know that it's actually going to come back again and again. So they're supposed to be
going to happen this year till they actually go.
Right. And they're supposed to be releasing the preliminary 2022 calendar in the next week. So keep an eye out for that as well. If you haven't watched Schumacher yet, watch it. We talked about it a couple episodes ago. It's been getting incredible reviews. Yeah. Samantha, and to everybody else, enjoy the race, whatever the part of the world you're watching it in, and I hope your driver wins. Ciao. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. If you want more F1 Geeks content to consume, check out the website, f1geeks.com. We have exclusive and original stories. You can also stream every episode of the podcast on there, or you can go to your favorite streaming platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Also, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, @F1GeeksOfficial, or Clubhouse @F1Geeks. Ciao.